The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
This is Cynthia Ganoff, and you are listening to the Mesmerized Podcast. Hey friends, welcome to the podcast. I know that you are loving this series because you guys loved my mom. My goodness, I'm not sure I've ever had a guest on that I've gotten so many people that have DM'd me, commented on social, texted me. I'm so glad you love my mom, and I think you might like her better than you like me, and I don't even blame you. So if you missed last week's show, go back and listen. She was a big hit, but I'm so thankful my mom was with us. And yeah, we're in the middle of this series where we are literally talking about my book, How'd I Miss That? But we're doing it through the lens of people from my past, friends, family, all kinds of people who make me laugh. I mean, we're doing it all. And this week, it falls under the category of people who really, really make me laugh. But before we get there, I wanted to say something. And that is, if you purchased a book, then thank you first and foremost, but you can get some free stuff from my publisher, and it's really easy. If you go to the podcast notes and you click on the link that is in there for freebies from the publisher, you know what? You will get a digital copy of the book. Are you hearing me? A digital copy of the book, like now. You can get a 7-day reading plan that goes along with the book. You can also get sneak peeks of the audiobook, which means the intro and the first chapter. And there's exclusive bonus content. And you know what that is? It's a small podcast from me and Melissa Radke, an additional one. So if you already purchased a book, go to the podcast notes, click on the link. All you have to do is fill out your name, the order number, and an email, and then it will send all of that to you. There's some other things we would love for you to do later, leave a review, other things, but it is all yours. If you haven't purchased a book, well, guys, moment of silence. Will you please do that? It would mean so much to me. And it is a week out, you guys. So it is not too late. And then you can also click on that same link and get all the fun bonus content. All right. Today, Melissa Radke's here. Oh my goodness. My daughter, Kate, as you know, edits this podcast. And Kate has texted me 5 times saying she cannot stop laughing about certain things. So you're going to get a kick out of today. We're going to laugh hard. And Melissa is an author. She's a podcaster. She's a speaker. She wrote Chicken Fried Women, which is a hilarious book that came out this last year. Anyway, she wanted to come on and interview me on my book, which is so kind and gracious. And I wouldn't say we interviewed, but we surely laughed a lot. So you're going to love Melissa. I cannot wait for you to hear today's show. Here we go with Melissa Radke. Melissa Radke, welcome to the Radke Ganoff Show.
The Radke Ganoff, which is how it should be.
Ganoff? How can we, what would our benefit name be? Like if we, you know how they combine names?
Salissa.
That's
Melinthia. Melinthia.
Melinthia. It's terrible. Terrible.
I am really happy to be talking to you today, and I'm going to say something right off the bat,
Okay. And
you're going to roll your eyes, and you're going to think in your head, no, I didn't want that on the show. I'm going to edit that out, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay, please do.
I'm going to start with, you're a great writer. Aww. You are a really good writer. You told me once, you said, Melissa, writing comedy can be so hard, and you made note of the fact that in my book, I do a lot of dialogue back and forth, and you said from a comedic perspective, that's very hard to do.
Genius how you do it.
And so I really appreciated that, but I got to give that right back to you. You don't have as much dialogue back and forth, storyline dialogue, but I'm just freaking impressed. I'm freaking impressed how you take something funny and make something meaningful. Actually, not even that. How you take something funny and make something Jesus. There's a difference in making it meaningful. I can make something, take something and make it meaningful. Any monkey can do that, as my mother would say. But you, how you put Jesus in there is impressive to me.
Well, that, Kate, edit that out. No, I'm kidding. But I didn't pay her to say this to anyone. But I appreciate that, especially because you know how I feel about, this is like the mutual whatever association over here, but you know how I felt about your book and how I told you that I read a chapter of your book on every chapter that I wrote of mine, just because if I can laugh at someone else's book, like it just reminds me why it matters and why funny resonates. And so anyway, that means a lot coming from you.
Thank you. Welcome. You're okay. Welcome. I actually thought she's going to be uncomfortable with that. She's not going to want that. But hey, doesn't medicine go down but easier, right? With laughter and with sugar, and it just does.
It's truthful. So, yeah, it is truth. I say this a lot. Because I get asked, you know, all the interview questions, I get asked a lot, why does funny matter? And I'm like, because if you can make someone laugh, you can speak truth over them. I've just found that to be right. So, but listen, enough. I need to talk to you about something very pressing real quick. And it is very pressing because last night about 10:30, we got back from Disney World. So I've been there for 5 days. I told you before we started recording, I had an interview first thing this morning with some poor, poor Philadelphia TV station that got the worst version of me because I'm so like Disney drugged out. It's really bad over here. But I needed to talk to you about something. And if you and I were to ever have a show, this is what I want to pitch it as.
Okay.
The title will be, what are we doing here? And we just talk about the things going on in this country that what are we doing here? And I would like to start our first version of this as the Disney World one. And I'm going to ask, what are we doing here in Disney World when I'm walking by the castle and we have grown adult women taking sexy selfies?
Like, a lie. You're lying.
Why?
What? You saw somebody doing that?
Not somebody, Melissa, somebody's. And they get grown adult women, I don't know, like there's men taking their picture for them. And I'm talking like skin tight, crop top. By the way, there was a cold front. It was freezing. We're all in jackets. It's like in the 30s at Disney while we were there. Cropped shirt and like 1 foot up, tucked up back and making the face and doing all these sexy, smoochy, kissy. And I'm like, is anybody embarrassed about stuff anymore?
For real.
Oh my gosh. Kidding. Yep. Okay.
So the question though is the question, why is she doing that? Mm-hmm. Or is the question actually, if we peel back this onion, who is interested in the photos of her doing that? That's what I want to know. Who's the curvaceous male that is going to like run to Instagram and look that up?
Did you say curvaceous?
Hey,
is that a word?
That's a great title for a podcast. The Pervacious Podcast.
I don't know if that's a word, but it's fabulous. Okay, I don't know. My college daughter was with us, and then my little one, our other son couldn't come. But my college daughter goes, not only did I not want to see that live, nobody wants to see that on your feed. There's nobody in like culture that's like, oh man, I'm really, I guess the pervacious ones, but otherwise.
The pervacious. Hey, David, you need to look that up because if it doesn't mean pervalicious, then something's wrong.
then we did something wrong. Okay, here's the second. What are we doing here from Disney World? And this is going to be a little bit controversial, but can we talk about the Disney gear that people wear?
Yes.
And you see like this dad. I'm sitting by this dad at this character lunch yesterday, and he looks to be probably a guy that's very successful in life, but he's got on a goofy hat with the long ears hanging down and I can't take you seriously. And I need you to take that off. I walk by the store and there's another grown, I'm talking about males right now, but there's the female versions. There's a grown man that's a large fella, large, and he's trying on a Disney bomber jacket. And I'm like, and he's like, saying this person, do you think it's too small? And I want to be like, that's the least of the worries with you buying a Disney bomber jacket.
Disney bomber jacket that you know cost about $600, right?
For sure.
So this is something he's going to wear in the legitimacy of his own life. And that's what's weird to me. Now, listen, did any of you wear the ears?
No, we didn't do any of that.
Okay, so I have zero problem with the ears. I have zero problem with a family that has to all wear the matching shirts in case they get lost, you know?
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about something that I hear people make fun of all the time.
Okay.
And that is Disney adults.
Yes.
Adults that you see out in public and they're wearing a Mickey Mouse watch and they have Mickey Mouse on their license plate and they are Disney adults. I want to talk about that. I am not a Disney adult. That said, I have absolutely nothing in this house with Mickey Mouse on it. That said, I am an Enneagram 7.
Yes, you are.
Which means Mm-hmm. Well, yes, I am, which means it is truly the most magical place in the world for me. You know, Bob Goff once said, if I want to write a good book, the first place I go is Disney. And I just walk around because it's so magical. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it feeds my Enneagram 7. And I'm just absolutely enamored with everything. I feel the exact same way.
Yep.
Does that make me a Disney adult? Does that make me bad? I don't even own the ears, but...
No, I agree with you. I love it. I'm not a 7. I'm a 3. So I'm just trying to achieve my way around there, by the way. But we rode that ride faster than they did. We got 4 in before 11. Like, that's how, I mean, it's not good. But I agree. We like Disney. We are Disney people, all the things. It's just all the accessorizing. Like, they have, like, they have a diamond store there, like a nice high-end jewelry. I can't remember.
I'm sure.
It's not Cartier, but it's something like that. Like, who's buying Disney diamonds or at least fine jewelry? I don't know. And is it my business, Melissa? No. But I just wonder, what are we doing here? So I don't know if you're a Disney adult or not. I think if you are, it's great. But if you start wearing a bomber jacket, I'm going to call you out.
And you're allowed, but David and I are going at the end of February. We're going, I have to go for a work thing. And the company is already purchasing me a day pass to Disney, so I can either go with the people I kind of work with,
yep,
or David could actually go with me and we could have an adult's day in the park without our kids, which sounds amazing because the last 2 times we've been, we've had to break up fights and we've had to catch vomit in our hands, right? In the middle of a line from Remy eating a turkey leg in 112 degree temperature. So
yes, you did.
You know, I think it might be enjoyable with David.
You have my, not that anybody was looking for it. You have my full support. I'd like to send you Disney ears if that's what you enjoy. But I want you to walk out of there with nothing more than some great memories, maybe the ears you wore. Don't you come out with any other garb. And if David's in a goofy hat, I don't want to know about it. Like, I don't care to know.
I would never allow it. Okay. If David's going to get a goofy hat, he ain't in bed with me that night. I'll tell you that right now.
Okay. Last one. And then we're going to get to real business. If there ever is real business for us. Yeah. But here's the last one. And to your point with the kids, what are we doing here when we're screaming at our kids like maniacs? And it typically starts with, do you know how much we spent on this trip? No, they don't. They don't understand the power of a mighty dollar. And so you take the good with the bad. And if you're going to lose your business, let's not do it in front of the Slinky Dog. Let's have some composure, people. Agree?
Yes, I feel you. I feel you. But yet, I put myself in the place of the parent who has walked all day on plantar fasciitis, right? who has shoes that are a little bit too small for them so that they could afford the fast pass, right? Like, they're hot, they're sweating, she's in perimenopause. Mm-hmm. He's
that
texting
me,
somebody
Melissa.
Later.
That was me. Huh? You're describing me.
So I do feel for the parents, but yelling it out in public, David and I know that there is a way to get their attention. It's by gripping the back of their neck where it hurts real bad underneath their hair and nobody can see it. So we know it's possible. You don't have to yell out loud.
Where it doesn't leave a mark.
Yeah, I just feel for the parents. I do. I do.
I feel for me because I'm in my 50s and I have a third grader. And that's just God's design apparently for our life, and that's fine. But we took our college kid to Buffer so that she could, like, you know, do the 10th Tower of Terror in a row because she ain't going to puke like the rest of us. And she doesn't have plantar fasciitis. She can't even say it yet, but her mom does. And so she's able to kind of walk that line, tip the balance for us where we can't. But I'm just saying, we all have our moments of frustration. I did too. My kid was a jerk some of the time too. Yes, he was. I just a tiny bit of decorum. Put on you have on your goofy hat, right? You have on your bomber and you are screaming like a maniac. And it's a visual. I'm like, I'll take the sexy selfie over that. All right, that's it. That's all I have.
And the videos that pop up, online of the adults fighting in Disney, what are we doing here? What is going on? You know what I mean?
Yes. I totally know what you mean. And you know what happened? I watched so much of it. I got to the airport last night. There's a girl, woman, screaming at her mom, so out of control. I assume it's a Disney rage. I don't know that she didn't have on Goofy ears, but I think it was Disney rage. It looked like, it smelled of Disney rage. The police came over and broke it up with her elderly mom. So I was being all judgmental about it and like, well, that's not good behavior. And JB, my little one's looking. I'm like, well, somebody needs to have a timeout. Like, I was real indignant until I went and got on the tram at the Orlando airport, and my kid sat on the back. There's like a little place you can sit, and this guy walked up, and he's like, my son sits down. He goes, oh, and I go, I'm sorry. Is he in your way? And he said, well, yes, we just bought a horse, and I'm trying to set this down. And he has one of those, what do you put on a horse when you ride it? A
saddle.
He has a saddle. And I said, oh, well, let me move him over. And I regained my composure because I love Jesus and I needed to. So I moved my kid over so he can put his saddle down. But in my head, I wanted to say, just because you bought a horse doesn't mean you have to be a horse's. But then I didn't say it because I tamed my Disney rage. So there you go.
Yeah. Good for you. Wow.
I thought it. So there we are.
Spoken like a true author and public speaker, ma'am.
Well, awesome. Thank you.
Which, by the way, P.S. makes us better than everybody else because we're authors and public speakers. So we really know we have decorum. Okay, people.
Decorum. Yeah, as you can see, as you can tell, that's decorum. Okay. So when you were on the show a while back, you were so cute. You were like, hey, let me come on and interview you when you get close to the release of your new book. And I was like, really? And you're like, I did it for Jen Hatmaker. I've done it before. And you offered, and we know you're regretting it now. David's sitting over there shaking his head like, yeah, she didn't want to do it now.
I am not regretting it in the least.
But you showed up, and I just want to say thank you. And I wouldn't say we're going to do an interview per se, but we are going to talk a little book, but we're just going to have a conversation and laugh. What do you think?
I love it. I knew that you would be that way. You don't really like to point a lot of attention at yourself, which I don't get at all. In fact, I'm sitting here thinking, my God, if she's not going to talk about her book, I'm going to turn it back on mine. I do want to talk about the book in your way, which is just conversational and, you know, right? So yeah. even your editor sent like a list. There's a list of Cynthia Yanoff questions that you can ask her about the book. And I said, David, take this. She's going to hear these same questions over and over and over. Did you have to answer them on the Philadelphia show this morning?
I had to answer like two or three, and I don't know. They're probably like, did she write that book or is someone else? Because she couldn't answer her own questions. They're still wondering what happened.
I do want us to dive in, and I'm going to ask you the most typical question, which is why this book? Why now? You know, my philosophy is we don't generally write what we haven't already been through ourselves. We can't teach what we don't know. So why this book? Why now for you?
Yeah, that is a question I really haven't been asked, and I love that. And to your point, I'm not going to read a parenting book, no offense, of someone that has a second grader and a four-year-old. Like, you just haven't walked that road yet. And I probably would have written that book all those years ago if someone would have given me an opportunity. So I'm so glad that the Lord was like, no, we're going to slow your roll, sister. And so, you know, the practical side is I got a 2-book deal and I wrote my first one, Life is Messy, God is Good. And then it was time to write the second one. And I was like, I got nothing. I don't know if you felt that way at all, but this, that sense of like mass, not even writer's block, like concept block. Like, I don't know. Do I have anything to say? And then I just feel like the Lord kept laying it on my heart. Like, listen, you're in your 50s with a third grader. And not that this is just a parenting book, but you've lived a lot of life. Like, what is it that you would want to tell your younger self? And I kept going back to like, don't miss it. Don't miss it in faith. Don't miss the things that matter. Don't miss it in parenting. Stop obsessing over things that aren't actually eternal. Don't miss it in marriage. Like, I just kept going through all these things. I'm like, you know what? That's totally the concept. And so, like you, my hope is to be really comical, you know, to laugh at myself and my family, but also at the same time, give you some spiritual truth and say like, listen, don't miss it. This stuff matters because life is brief. So that was kind of how it came about. But man, the process, you and I have talked about this. That book writing process is not for the weak. And I know someone's like, well, I've always wanted to write a book. Stop complaining. And I hear you on that. But when you are as extroverted as we are, to sit days and days and months and months.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awful. It's terrible.
It's terrible. So, but yeah, I'm so thankful to be on this side of it. I think it's John Acuff. I don't know if you follow him. I love him, but he
I
just,
love him. Love him.
Oh, I love him. We need to interview him. Let's get that on the, I've done it once, but it's been a while. But he basically talks a lot about how you know, to get to do things that other people don't get to do, you have to do things other people don't want to do. And I feel like that's kind of book writing. Nobody wants to sit and day after day do the stuff, but then one day you get to have an actual book and it's in your hands. You're like, okay, Lord, like use it. So yeah.
Well, I think the topic is genius, actually. And it's even you talking about, I didn't even know what the concept would be. It's a really catchy concept. It's you made the title funny. I want to talk about, you said, how'd I miss that? And then you talked about drive-through confessions. What are the other ones?
Gas pump obsessions and figuring out what really matters. And yeah, obviously drive through.
I want to go gas pump, drive through, and I want to know why you put those. Like, what is the story behind those?
Okay, so gas pump. I was driving to talk at a big event in Houston, and so you know I live in Dallas, so a couple hours away, and I stopped at Buc-ee's. Now, Melissa, can we have a moment of silence for Buc-ee's?
You talk about freaking Disney adults. We got Buc-ee's adults running amok. Cynthia, my daughter, now she's 19. She's about to be 20 years old. She's a beautiful, curvaceous. I did not say pervacious. She's a curvaceous woman. She's beautiful. I mean, I'm not kidding. She's got a personality to match it. She's a 10 all the way around. She called me from Buc-ee's wearing a Buc-ee's onesie.
Nope.
And I said, I didn't raise that. No, I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't raise that. And I'll spike that right off of you. She said, Mom, it's freezing cold. I've got two girlfriends in the car. They're laughing their heads off. We love it. We're all wearing one. Now, that's not right.
It's not.
That's the same as a big guy wearing a bomber jacket.
It is. It's. And you know what's worse than you birthing it? I married it. My husband, he bought one time. And you know when he wears it? And this is, my husband's a trial lawyer. He's a pretty serious guy. He wears it once a year on Christmas morning with the tail and everything. I'm like, no,
that's no,
it's horrendous.
But he's a trial lawyer. He's got to expend some joy at some point. Let him have it.
Have your moment.
Okay. You're at a Buc-ee's.
So I'm driving on, I stop. And so this woman asked me, she and her daughter asked me for food. And I'm like, well, I don't have any money. I can't give you anything. And she's like, no, could you go in and buy me food? So I'm going in, Melissa. And I'm like, well, clearly they want my kidney, right? Like that's my frame of thought is they're going to rob my car while I'm away. They want to steal my kidney. Like what kind of sham is this at the Buc-ee's? But I went in and I grabbed them stuff and I'm coming back and I'm in a rush, need to get gas. And I give them the stuff and they were lovely. They thanked me and they went on their way. And my kidney was intact and my car was intact. I'm like, okay. And so I have to get to this event. I'm keynote, Melissa. Okay. I have to get to the platform. And I just tear off. And when I tore off in my car, I actually tore off the gas pump.
I knew you were going to say it. I knew it. Oh my gosh.
I know. Yeah. And in all the frenzy, I forgot to put it back up. And apparently Buc-ee's people are stupid because no, like myself, like gas didn't go flying. They have like some sort of hook and it just kind of comes undone. So I'm literally down the way and I have like that decision to make. Like, what am I going to do? Am I going to like, back on up and go replace it? Or so I got out and I'm like, you know, three cars down. I got up and I had the walk of shame. I carried it back and
did you really?
It was horrifying. Yes. So
oh my gosh.
And so I, you know, in the book that I talk about this, how that day what seemed most important was what was going to happen on a platform. And that day, I think the Lord cared most about what was happening at the pump. And I think every day we have decisions. We have to decide, are we going to care more about the platform or the pump? And your platform may not be platform. I'm speaking to the listener because I know Melissa does show up on platforms often, but it's not everybody is up on a stage somewhere, but we all have the things that we think are Instagrammable, or they're the things that seem most culturally acceptable, or the things that make us look good. And are we going to care about those things? Are we going to care about the things God cares about? And I think that was one of those moments where the Lord slowed me down. He's like, actually, you know what? Your big assignment today was at the pump. And I did it. I did the thing, but the heart and the motive behind it was not what the Lord would have wanted for me. And so I feel like that's a thing in life. I've missed it so many times where I've thought the big things were the big things, and it was really the small things were the God things. And that's my encouragement, I think, with that story, is just sometimes when you're that focused on the platform, the big moments, that we miss the small ones. And I think God's in the small moments.
Absolutely. And I have to argue, though, with that, in that, did you miss it? Did you miss it in the moment? Okay, maybe, but you know, you're not, for Pete's sake, you're not Erwin McManus, you know, that's getting all, you know.
I mean, Erwin McManus.
Where did that come from? That made me sound brilliant. I mean, you know, I'm just talking these big theologians. You're not Timothy Keller, for Pete's sake, that just knew what Revelation said about that. But I'm just saying, did you miss it? Because in the long run, you learned from that.
Yeah.
You're now teaching that. So I, you know, it's funny. I read, I did a master class once.
Oh,
with
excuse us.
I know.
Pardon Steve us, Martin. Ma'am.
I bought the Steve Martin master class where he talks about joke writing.
Oh.
And he says it's absolutely in everything. It's every moment of every day. It's the person that just looks for the funny in everyone walking around them, right? Mm-hmm. And then Nora Ephron said it best, everything is copy. Everything is copy.
Oh, that's so and good.
Right? So that moment, the hose, that's hilarious, right? But you found the copy in that. So I think in the moment you might have missed the point, but you're just human.
Right.
And I appreciate the telling of it. You know, here's what I learned from it. I just love that kind of stuff. But tell me about the drive-through confession.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this isn't as deep or as meaningful of a story, other than I don't want any of us to lose listeners over this. And I don't want to be controversial, but I need to share with you what I share in the book. I'm going to admit something.
Hey friends, can I introduce you to our newest podcast sponsor, Time for Learning? And Time for Learning supports a flexible, personalized homeschool experience for your family. What I love is it's an all-in-one curriculum. It's online and everything you need to teach pre-K all the way to 12th grade. And flexibility, I mean, that's the key here. You can travel, you can explore your kids' passions and hobbies without the constraints of traditional school hours. And so you can get started with a monthly plan to see if it's right for your family and multiple students. Yep, you can do that. You can save up to 30% by opting for an annual plan. And they also have stay on track features, which is templates for transcripts, grades, diplomas, just makes it easy to match the homeschool requirements in all 50 states. And get this, they have been in business 20 years and served over 1 million students. What I also love and what I plan on doing in my house, it's a great way if you don't homeschool, just to supplement. Things you can do in the afternoon, you can do it over the summer to bridge gaps. And so I'm excited about doing that with my youngest. So check it out. If you're curious if Time for Learning is right for your family, visit timeforlearning.com. That's time4learning.com to explore their curriculum and find the perfect plan for your student. You can get started with a monthly subscription to see just how much your kids enjoy learning on their own terms.
I like Arby's.
That's okay. They've got the meats. That's okay.
And do I wish they would change that slogan in light of the fact that they have horsey sauce? I don't know what meats.
Horsey sauce is now available in the grocery stores, and my parents own it. They own a bottle of horsey sauce.
Gosh, I love the horsies. Is the horsey sauce the red one?
Horsey sauce is the red one. And then the Arby sauce is the horseradish.
Okay, got it. So I just talk about in the book a little bit about how, I mean, I only go to Arby's, like, I treat it like I've killed someone. Like, I go to back alleys when no one's with me late at night, drive through, throw the trash away, you know, dig a hole, throw it away, turn off the location device on my phone. It's one of those. But that's kind of, so I talk a little bit about that. Honestly, I can't even remember. I'm sure there's a point, but I think the gist of it is there's a lot of things that we do that we're not proud of, that we're trying to hide, and that, you know what? God sees all that we're doing. Like, and he wants, we're not hiding anything from God. And I think in that chapter, I get into identity a lot. I know, like, I don't know about you, Melissa, but if I have to read one more stinking book about identity, yet at the same time, it's such an important thing, because if you know your identity, if you know that the things that you do day in and day out, they matter, but they don't necessarily always define you. I talk about my son, JB, that we adopted from foster care. We went to the courthouse, right? And the day that we adopted him, they gave us a new birth certificate. And his old one was no longer valid. And so this new one they gave to us, it was under seal. Great. And we left. And since that time, like, obviously he's done things we don't approve of. He's been a jerky at Disney before, and he's been defiant, all these things. But not one time have we gone back to the safe and pulled out the old birth certificate, right? No, because like his identity is sealed now as a Yanoff. And I think if we understood that concept with the Lord, that we are adopted into his family, and that our identity is not dictated, it's not defined by our behavior, then I think it's a game changer. And so I think so many times we're slinking around, and, you know, we're in dark alleys and we're afraid to admit certain things. And I'm not saying that we condone the things that are not of God, but at a minimum, let's acknowledge the fact that they exist. Let's get community around that. Let's find ways to heal ourselves, but also know that God's big enough that he loves us no matter what. We're adopted into his family. Nothing takes that away. And knowing that, then we can live differently each day and know that the Lord can still use us in the midst of that. And so I think that chapter, it kind of stems out of a whole idea of just our identity matters. And I try to approach it from a funny way, but also that if we know who we are in Christ, if we know we are forgiven, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us, like that he is for us and he is with us, that all the things that we want to hide and sweep away and discount ourselves, say we're not good enough, point to someone else and say they're better, they could do this. Like, we don't have to be that way, because the Lord is for us and he will use us in mighty ways. So identity is a big one. It is.
I love the analogy of the that you're ours now. It's under seal. That's not going to change, right? The old has passed away. You did say, if I have to read another book on identity, and I'm right there with you, you know, the last thing you want to do as a writer is say to your editor, hey, I have an idea for a book. It's on our identity. Right? But yet, why do you think it is that it's been written about so much? It's such an important topic, but often women don't walk in it. They're not getting it.
I mean, I watch it with my daughter. I know, I mean, obviously you have a beautiful daughter too, but I watch my daughter and I think of all the things that I've prayed over her for her life. I pray for safety. I pray for all the things, you know, a godly husband someday, but like really I want the most for her is identity. I want her to be able to walk in the truth of who she is, that she is a child of God, because I know that it impacts how we live so much. And I think that's why people write on identity, because I think if you can get it through your head, who you really are and whose you really are, that you will live differently. Your days will be comprised of things completely different than if you were trying to prove something to yourself or prove something to someone else or feel good enough or act good enough. Like, we spend so much margin trying to show up and be good enough. And if we could understand that we are already good enough because of whose we are, like, it just changes how your days are set out. And so I think for my daughter, I don't know why we miss it. I miss it all the time. I have to remind myself all the time. I have to be like, okay, nobody's going back to the safe to get my old birth certificate. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a new one and it is sealed. But man, I pray that over my daughter. I'm like, get that right. Don't miss that one. Know who and whose you are so that you can go do big things for the Lord and you don't spend your life trying to prove something that someone's something wrong that someone said in sixth grade, or maybe something that I inadvertently said to her, or what the enemy's speaking into her, or our culture who's out there speaking that you have to be thin and perfect and beautiful and play the trombone and the lead in the play and all these things that you have to even get in the air quote right colleges. Like, stop letting everything else define what makes you good enough and okay, because it's never going to be enough if it's outside of God.
And I think that culturally speaking, playing the trombone would probably be something that the culture would maybe frown on. You know, more so.
I was trying to just say be cultured, and I'm so uncultured. I couldn't think of a way to say it.
That says a lot about you. It says a lot about you, actually. And it says even more about your daughter that at one point you said to her maybe, hey, you should try the trombone. She's like,
she's like the biggest jock ever. And I, by the way, was in the marching band. She would be dying at this conversation because she's like on every sports team. And I was in the band, and she's like, my husband always told our kids, Melissa, you can be in a band, but don't be in the band.
That's very true. I think that women a lot of times think, okay, if I learn all about my identity, how do I walk that out? What do I do? What are the steps to that? And I think it's really about nothing. Right. You get to stop. That's the whole point of walking in your identity. You get to stop performing. And I know you talked a little bit about that, you know, for a long time wanting the praise of man versus the praise of God. And that's the whole point of identity. You get to stop. You get to just stop trying to prove, stop trying to impress, stop trying to win, stop trying, you know, and God just does it for you, right?
Stop taking the selfies, people. Like, right. We're good. Like, you don't have to prove your worth and your value. But yes, I mean, it's, if you knew your identity, I think it's actually like a deep breath of like, oh, like exhaling versus that running after. So yeah, I'm with you on that one. That's a prayer for myself, but really for my kids too, that they know their identity.
Yeah. Everything looks good. I was trying to tell David, I wish you could have seen me just now. I went just like this to David.
What does that mean? She's making some weird.
He doesn't know. Cynthia, I'm going to tell you something.
Please do.
David Radke and I have been married 32 years. And 32. We can look at each other and know what the other's thinking. Yeah, but if we, in private, like I just tried to do, throw up a hand signal, we don't have a clue what the other one is saying. Okay?
He's over there like flushing a toilet somewhere or something, thinking
that's what you're saying. David will look at me and go like this.
Like money.
You know what that means? Huh. No. To David, it means tell people to share this live.
What?
When I'm on a live, he'll go like this, tell people to share it.
She's I'm like, doing no, that
that's a
listening.
Stripper doing dollar bills.
Yeah, that's dollar.
Okay.
Well, share this on live. Okay, well, everybody.
This right here, I'm doing this, and that means get this for an Instagram story. Get this for an Instagram story. So I can tag Cynthia in it. We can talk about Instagram.
I thought there was a crawler going across the bottom.
No, there's not a crawler. David, this isn't CNN for Pete's sake. All
a
right.
Crawler. I thought he said caller. I'm like, what? We're taking a caller next. Yeah. So there
I actually want to talk. I want to talk about one chapter in particular that you refer to as the great intermission in the middle of your book, as if it's just kind of a silly little chapter. It's called A Faith Fixer Upper. I loved that chapter. Here's one of the many sentences that won me over in your writing. Okay. Little things are the scaffolding of a meaningful life is a precious sentence. And it's such a easy to close your eyes and imagine that sentence. I loved it. I want to talk about that. And of course, what you want to say about that chapter, A Faith Fixer Upper, you go on to say that, what is it? What did I love? We are all building the house we live in. Oh, come on. That's good stuff. So walk us through that. I don't need to know about your obsession with Joanna Gaines. I don't personally have one at all. In fact, if you were ever on Fixer Upper, I probably wouldn't even watch it.
Yes,
I have
you would. Nothing. Yes, you would. Them. David,
I wouldn't. You know, anybody that can do what they do, I don't trust them. I don't trust that kind of talent. I don't trust that kind of talent. I think they've sold their soul to the devil or something. I think they're witches and ought to be burned.
Heresy. Heresy.
But talk to us about that chapter because I loved it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I just told, and I'll make this really quick on the illustration, but I heard this incredible sermon illustration about a guy who was going to retire. He's a custom home builder. And when he went to retire, the boss is like, I need you to do one more house. And he was so mad about it, but he ended up doing it, but he just did a cheap job of it because he was ready to retire. And at the very end, the boss hands him the keys and said, this house is actually for you. We wanted to do this for you. In that moment of like, oh man,
I would have given it my best had I had known, right? And instead, he had used cheaper labor and contractors and materials. And I talk about just how that's kind of how it is in our own lives. Like, you guys, we're building the house we live in every single day with the decisions we make and what sends us freaking out at the school, what we say to the coach when our kid gets pulled out in a key moment, how we spend our money, how we speak about our spouse. Like, we're these little tiny things are the scaffolding of the houses we live in. And I know this because I've built, I feel like in my life, two houses. Like, the first 40 years, I built a house that looked pretty good on the outside. And there were some great components. You know, I've married my husband and we've been married 25 years. And we had some kids and some great things came about. But also, it was a lot of people pleasing, and it was a lot of wanting to define success, or defining success by the way culture defines success. A lot of achievement for the sake of achievement. And it wasn't really a house that was worthy of living in, metaphorically speaking. And then I feel like you hit your 40s. You can weigh in on this too and tell me if you agree. But somewhere in your 40s, maybe mid 40s, I don't know, you start realizing, like, you know what? I'm not sure all that stuff matters anymore, especially you get in your 50s. And I feel like I rebuilt a house. And the second house was one that's actually worth living in. And it's one where I stopped caring so much about what other people think. I care what God thinks. And I don't have to be the most popular, and I don't have to have the biggest platform, and I don't have to write the best book out there, although I hope I wrote a good one. But I don't have to be all things to all people, right? Because I know that I am all things to him, to the Lord, the one that matters. And so it's funny because I think about these small pivots, these small changes, things from what I do every day for a living, really, to just the way that I try to treat people, the way that I raise my kids. They built a different house, and both houses look the same from the outside, but man, they were so different on the inside. And I guess my encouragement would be this. We had our foundation fixed. I don't know if you've had the joy of that. It's a real pleasure to spend $20,000 on something no one sees. But I think about that all the time. And I think about how no one has ever come by and been like, hey, your foundation's nice. Nobody's giving us praise or attaboys. But really, if we have great hardwood floors and beautiful custom curtains, it doesn't matter if our foundation isn't solid. And my first house, like, it had some pretty components on the outside, but the foundation wasn't solid. And my second house, like, I feel like the foundation's better. We're on better ground. We're on the Lord's ground. And it's not perfect, man. We're screwing it up daily. I nearly yelled at the guy on the tram the other night. So let's calm that down. But, you know, every day you have a decision, like, what matters? What are you going to focus on? Who gets the priority? What gets the priority? Is it what's urgent in the moment, or is it what's eternal? And so I just feel like that's just a good reminder for myself and hopefully others that our lives are comprised of tiny moments of decisions. And are they God decisions, or are they just our life decisions? Right. What do you mean by we're living in the middle?
We're living in the middle. What did I say? Who knows, Melissa? I've already lost my train of thought. I'm really tired.
Well... I watched a YouTube message not too long ago from a female pastor and not from Australia. I love her. I follow Charlotte Gamble. I just love her when she speaks. And she actually did an entire message of when the disciples got in the boat and they were in the middle of leaving from Jesus' teaching to going to the next place that Jesus was teaching, and all that can happen when you're in the rocky middle. Yeah. And so I was reminded of that on this chapter, because you talked about a lot of times we are living in the middle of the first house and the second house, yeah, and what we're going to do, you know. And so I just wanted to ask, I don't know, it just kind of brought that back up in my mind and the importance of that. But there was nothing I loved better than the house that the man built, and he was building his own home. Yeah. And really, it's in all of these really small things. Like you just said, it's the way you talk to the coach. It's the way your kids hear you fight with your spouse. It's the way you, and I also loved the reference of everything that's going to be beautiful and is going to be built has to come after demolition. All want to go on and on and on about the scripture, you know, beauty for ashes. He makes beauty for ashes. But are you okay with the fire? Are you okay with the destruction first? Because if he's going to make beauty, it's going to come from some hard hits. It's going to come from some, as you said, bring in chip. Right? Because it's time for the demolition.
Right.
And that is so important. That's so good. And I love, I haven't heard that sermon, but I love that you're talking about that, because really in the middle between the two places is where there was the tumultuous, right? The hard stuff came along. And I think that is the middle. Some people refer to it as the messy middle, but yeah, that's when the refinement comes in. That's when the hard comes. That's when you're like, are you even hearing me, Lord? I've been praying this for so long. Are you even good? How could you allow this to happen? Like in those moments, like those are the refining moments. And I know you've walked through some really hard, we've talked about it before. Haven't we all? But I will say, on the other side of the hard, which I would not wish on anyone, some of the things that we've had to walk, I will say this, you know the Lord differently, right? You see a version of him, a side of him you've never seen before, a kind, a compassionate side. You also learn some really tough lessons. And I'm just so thankful that he doesn't, if he did everything instantly, the way I wanted it done and the time I wanted it done, I would take credit for many of the things he did.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah.
And when I weighed it out, and I know it's his timing and I have to wait through it and I have to struggle through it and suffer through it. At the end, there's no denying that it's only him. And so, yeah.
That's so good. I love it. That was just one of the many chapters that stood out to me. So, well, I don't want to interview you. This isn't, I know you don't like that, but.
We're done. I've had all I can take of Melissa Radke in one day. No, I'm kidding.
Melissa Radke giving you praise. I know it must, as my mother would say, it must be so hard.
I want y'all to know that when we started this off, I commented on her hair and I said, I like the color. There's some contrast. And she basically said, it's trash. How could you ever think that? And then we discussed.
What is this color? You know what this color is called? Grown out is what this color is called.
Well, I've got a mullet, as we discussed, per Heather McFadden. So I think we're back to the shallow. We're back where we started, the shallows, where we do our best work, Melissa.
That is good work.
Is keeping it shallow. Okay, so listen, we're going to do one other thing after this. One, I'm going to thank you. I'm going to get there. But we're going to do a short podcast that's going to be part of the free stuff you get if you pre-ordered a book. You get, I don't know, plus I don't know, you get like a chapter or two of the book or something, or maybe the free audio or some discussion questions. I can't remember. If I was really good at the PR side, well, then I would know those things, but I don't. I have no clue. So, but we are going to give a little extra content. So you are sweet and you're willing to stay on and do another quick little short
one. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
If you look at my social, you will see, we'll have it linked where you can put in an order number if you ordered a book and get some of the free content. And here, Melissa and I talk about something else nonsensical, probably that I don't wash my face. And we always have to cover that when we're together.
It's disgusting. She didn't even wash it after Disney last night. I'm just kidding. She did.
That was my once a month where I washed it.
Mickey Mouse hemp tattoo. We had to wash that off this morning. I think even my crowd, the people who watch the Radke Show podcast and listen to it will absolutely love How Did I Miss This? I told David, I said, I want to share this on the Radke Show because they will fall in love with you. The only thing better than you and it's the only thing better than me is me and you. Okay.
Agreed. when we start our new show, but there's no plan, everyone, I still vote for What Are We Doing Here is the title. And we're just going to address things that are going on in culture. And we're going to say, what are we doing here? That's my.
Okay. But here's the thing though. Are you willing? Would we dare go deep? Like, are we talking like we're going to keep it shallow? Like, what is Bradley Cooper doing to his face? Which, by the way, what the heck is he doing to his face? But or are we going like, ICE, what do we think of it?
Oh, no, we're surely not going political. And we're going to talk about Bradley Cooper's face, but then we're also going to go back to identity and say, Bradley, you're enough.
You're enough,
Jesus.
Bradley.
Bradley, you were before. May I be the first to say he was plenty.
Because he was plenty. Because I don't want to go ICE, what do we think? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to go political. No. It's not fun. And it makes me break out in hives.
Same. And I'm not that smart.
Me neither. I can talk about politics for exactly 27 seconds. That's all you're going to get out of me.
Great. So, all right. Well, our new show will be a smashing success when we never start it. But, hey, in all seriousness, thank you for doing this. You're always such a great cheerleader. You're always I'll do it. Or at least your husband says she'll do it. And I appreciate that.
I will do it. I am a good cheerleader because I think women are very capable. And I think that you have such a gift. I know women are going to
Love this book. It is, I think the best books are bathroom books. And I'm talking about bubble bath books. Like, lay in after a hard day, draw yourself a bath, lay in there with this book. It's just meaningful how you can, it matters, but it's so relatable. And I know you've heard that before, but it's really, really great. And I just can't thank you enough for writing it.
Well, thank you, friend.
It's wonderful.
And guys, and before we wrap up, you've heard me obsess over her book, but I'm going to say it again. Chicken Fried Women. I just said it right, didn't I?
Yes. Sweet Lord. Don't talk about that book no more.
It's so good. It's so good. It's hilarious. If you love Melissa, you will love her book, because people say this to me all the time, and I think it's so true of you too. I write like I speak. And so if you read it and you know me, or you've heard me enough, you're like, oh, it sounds like you're talking, you know, like yourself. And I think that's what you do too, Melissa, so well. So everyone check it out. Thanks for being here. Let's go do one more short podcast. You ready?
I'm ready.
Thanks, friend. Bye.
Bye, y'all.
All right, friends. Isn't she a treat? Like, she's such a gem. I love her. She is hilarious. Makes me laugh. Don't forget to click onto the podcast notes where we have a link for the freebies from my publisher. If you've bought a book, then man, jump on there and download the additional podcast I did with Melissa. You can listen to that as well as other things, a digital copy of the book and some of the audiobooks. So make sure you check that out. You guys, thank you for supporting this whole few weeks where we have talked about my book. Thank you for helping launch it. Thank you for every single one of you that ordered it. And more than anything, thanks for being a part of the Mesmerized family. You're the very best.